Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi there and welcome to this week's Scout the Game Week. Scout the Game Week is our weekly podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Scout, Scout Network. In each episode, we will look back at the game week we've just played and assess what we can learn to help us in the next round of fixtures. We'll also catch up with a member of the Scout Network to find out what they've been up to, as well as gaining an insight into their FPL planning and content. I'm Sam from the FPL family. Let's scout the game week. This week, I am joined by the lovely Az from, well, I was going to say from FPL Black Box, but also now from FF Scout 2. Az, thank you for joining me. How are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you. We just had a bit of a catch-up that went on for way longer than it should have before we hit record on this.
It's funny. How are you doing? We've actually been talking for about 45 minutes. So I know everything. I know exactly how you're doing, Sam.
Exactly. You know exactly what's going on in my life, which is not a lot given the lockdown. Let's start by kind of getting into a bit about you then. I don't want to spend too long talking about you because anybody who's anybody in the FPL community will know who Az is. But let's talk about about
my
Black
ego
Box.
Is going to soar off of this.
Let's talk about Black Box, because Black Box for me is, I just love it. Well, as you know, Lee and I both normally watch Black Box whenever you guys are on. So you want to tell us a little bit about it and about how Mark came to be part of this with you?
Yeah, well, it was actually, you know, a lot of people don't know, it's my idea, and Mark came to me, which is seems a bit of a miracle. I started it a couple of years ago. It was just, I just wanted to do something. I was doing the Scout Cast. I just wanted to do something of my own, really. So I just started I'd read the book Black Box Thinking, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I think, you know, I make so many mistakes during a season. Maybe I can analyze these and kind of learn from them. So started doing just look at the difference in quality between the streams we do now and the ones I started early on. I didn't know what I was doing, just tried to get something out. So yeah, started doing those. I know. Yeah. For beginners, proper noob. But yeah, started doing those. And then about half an hour long, I think, just kind of reflections on all the mistakes I was making. Yeah, and then beginning of this season, Mark obviously was wanting to come back into the FPL world. So saw that I was doing those and sent me an email and said, you know, really like this idea. What do you think about kind of partnering up? And the thing about Mark is he's so obsessional about stuff. He said, you know, I agreed to it, and I didn't really expect it to have got to where it is now with graphics, and you know, he's making me buy expensive microphones and expensive cameras, and you know, he's doing sound checks for engineers, and he's brilliant because he really pushes and drives stuff on, and he does sort of the main body of the content because he likes doing all that, and I'm kind of I'd say the pretty face, but the face, and he's definitely the brains of it. But it works well, I think. People seem to be really enjoying it, and it's a lot of fun. So
it's a really, really nice dynamic between the two of you. I think that's the thing, is that sometimes, because they are long, they're not exactly short short pieces of content anymore. But yeah,
we never intended for them to be that long.
No, like, they were supposed to be really an hour. They are engaging throughout, and I think that is why I like them so much. Is that you sit there and you can be on there for a couple of hours and not realize that you've been doing this for a couple of hours. And I think, you know, that's credit to how good it is to the both of you, because I think that you work really well together, like, because you are quite different in the way that you do things and in the way that you're kind of playing the season.
One of us is doing well, one of us isn't. That's about
But it's good, and it's fascinating to kind of listen to the insights. And I know that, you know, ahead of last week, and there was a lot of chatter about captaincy, and Lee and I spend a lot of time after we've watched a Black Box kind of going, oh, what are you going to do then? Are you going to, you know, captain Kane on the back of that, or are you going to do this? And I think that's what's really good about Black Box, is that it opens up your own kind of conversation in your head. So it's not necessarily giving you the answers of you should do this. It's more like, you know, these are some information, and then you take it and interpret it in a way.
I have not paid Sam to say this, just for anyone listening. This is all off our own back.
No, this is all.
I'll set you 20 quid off of this, Sam.
Thank you. I think, I really like it. I think it's fascinating. And you know, we have been known on one of your really, really late night ones to start watching it downstairs. And I'll be like, I really need to go to bed. And then we'll sort of go, we'll be upstairs still cleaning our teeth while still listening to you and Mark kind of chat about whatever it is, because it is kind of compelling, and we kind of don't want to go to leave it out, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, I love it. For anybody that hasn't watched an episode of Black Box yet, definitely make sure you do. It is incredibly good. Rather than inflate your ego anymore, shall we get into talking about what happened?
Enjoyed that.
In game week 28. Because game week 28, well, I don't know about you, but for me, it was a bit of an unmitigated disaster, to be honest. It was just another one of those game weeks where the players that I was expecting to do something just didn't. How did it go for you? Was it a good week?
Another meh week. I mean, I had Stones and Cancelo, so it wasn't a complete disaster. I know if you didn't, so you talk about Pep Roulette.
I didn't.
I got lucky this time. Had the right two. But I mean, everyone else blanked. Like, literally, everyone else in my team blanked. And you know, I was. You look at the first game. Often your game week is dictated by how the first game goes, and that Aston Villa Newcastle match and that last minute goal for Newcastle really killed me, because I had a double Villa clean sheet. Plus, I had Target as well. So he was on for about 15 points at one point, and they stripped his assist off him. They concede. Yeah, so it was. If I hadn't had Stones and Cancelo, it would have been terrible. But luckily, I got lucky with that. But captaincy, I mean, Fernandes, Salah, Gundogan, like all the big guys, Kane, all blanking.
And it kills you when the captaincy goes. It's like, you know, so for me, obviously, I was on Captain Kane, and as a Spurs fan, the weekend was just pretty much just a disaster. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have the two Man City boys that you just talked about. I do have Diaz, who of course did play and got a clean sheet, but I'm looking at it thinking, oh, well, that's a bit meh, because, you know, the other two have got what they did. I did have Luke Shaw, who has been yet again, you know.
Brilliant. He's been great.
So really pleased with him. And then I got an Ollie Watkins assist. But other than that, it was kind of like, that's it.
Shaw's been a really frustrating one, because he's someone who I think most people identified, you know, weeks, months ago as being a really key player, and the stats are off the chart. United keeping clean sheets now, but just with this blank coming up, it's just put you off. It always put me off getting him in. Actually, I do wonder if there's something around that of, you know, have we focused a bit too much maybe on the blank game week coming up? It's a bit late now. Not going to bring him in now with the blank, but you know, 3 or 4 months ago, if you bought in Shaw, your quid's in.
Yeah. I mean, I bought him in game week at the end of game week 23. So the Justin injury was the capital, you know, that was the moment where I was like, right, I just have to have a replacement. And I was sort of looking ahead to 30 or to 29 at that point, but I was equally thinking, who's got nice fixtures for now? As if there's somebody that's got both, then great. But if there's somebody that hasn't, because we weren't really sure at this stage who was going to be playing in the blank game week, we had the kind of all the chatter in the community about, you know, would there be some other games that might make it, but we didn't really know for sure. So I bought in Luke Shaw at that point, and since then he's just been phenomenal. Like he's had hauls on a number of occasions and has been really good. So he's now one of those players where I'm like, I don't really want to take you out ahead of game week 29 because I know you don't play, but I want you, even with the fixtures that are a little bit difficult after game week 29. But your attacking potential is great, so I want to hold him. So he's probably likely to be one of the ones that ends up on my bench for game week 29 because he's one of the players that I'm not yet sure I'm ready to get rid of. There are a couple of others after their performance in game week 28. I'm particularly thinking about Salah, who I'm kind of like, I can't see any value in keeping you longer than, well, the next 5 minutes in reality. I held him for this week just because I wanted two transfers going into game week 29. It felt like a good decision to have two transfers to make a couple of changes just in case something bad happened in 28. And my goodness, did bad things happen in 28. But now I'm looking at Salah thinking, surely Jota looks like a far better option at like half the price.
Yeah, and Salah's a frustrating one because if you had sold him, you probably sold him for Son, Bale, Aubameyang. all blanked, or you moved over for Kane and he blanked. So it was a good week to sell him because, again, he blanked and the signs have been there, but no one really delivered. So unless you went for someone a bit kind of left field who did get some points, you weren't really benefiting from it this week. Mm. But going forward, I mean, this now, I think, is the time to sell him because you've got the Spurs. I mean, Son's injury, I think he would have been a perfect switch for me personally. Bale, I love Bale. I'm sure you do as well, but he's I'm not entirely convinced on his minutes and his form. I think I still don't think he's got the full backing of Mourinho. So if he doesn't perform, he's the first off. You know, he's lucky to get 60 minutes, I think, in the last game. But yes, Salah has to go, I think, and I'm going to be wildcarding in 31 probably.
Yeah, me too.
And I can't see sticking with Salah. I think Jota is the man to go for because
the fixtures are nice.
Better.
Yeah, Liverpool fixtures are nice, so they look like you want to invest in them. But Jota does seem to have, he doesn't seem quite as jaded. Salah seems jaded to me watching him play at the moment. He looks a bit, you know, like he's missing that spark of magic around him. And of course, Liverpool have been with the players that they've had out, but they've got some players back from injury now. And I was expecting to see a bit more kind of oomph about Salah, and we just didn't really get it. But we did get a lot of injuries in game week 28. So we obviously have mentioned Son already. Bamford is still a bit of a doubt, although looks like from what Bielsa said yesterday that he might be okay. Traore went off injured. We had Dan Burn, who I'm sure you'll have some views on and what that might mean for Brighton defensively, went off. And Saka. So we kind of got a number of players that would have been quite important in people's game week 29 plans disappearing off to injury in 28. What do you do about these guys? I think with Son, we're pretty certain he's not going to play, particularly given Mourinho's comments around if he plays, he's probably going to have to go away with South Korea the week after, and he probably needs that time for recovery. So he's probably the only one there that we're sure isn't definitely not going to play, or actually probably Burn as well. But what do we do about the likes of Bamford, Traore? Do we just keep them and hope, or do we transfer them out and then be annoyed if they do play in 29?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, hopefully the press conferences give us a little bit more of a clue, some of these guys. If they all stay, I mean, Bamford, I think the signs are that he's
looks good for
okay.
him.
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't be using a transfer to get rid of him, despite a doubt, because he's probably a player you want to keep longer term. Although Leeds, attacking-wise, have gone off the boil a bit. Maybe a bit harsh. I mean, their stats are still good, and they've been unlucky against West Ham. I mean, the amount of chances they had in that game particularly, you know, they should have got something. It's hard to say. I mean, I would just wait for the press conferences. I mean, if they are injured, then you've got to think about kind of a bit longer term. So what's interesting is going into 29, some of the fixtures just aren't so good. So like obviously Spurs have Newcastle, which is a great fixture. Leeds have Sheffield United, great fixture. United have Brighton as well. I mean, they haven't got a game, but you know, you're going into that thinking you can use a transfer to swap out for a United player. To Shaw is a good example of someone I'm looking to bring in. And Villa have Fulham, like good game. So some of these games, you know, do actually look really good. So if you are using a transfer to bring in a player with a game this week, a lot of these players do have a decent game going into 29. So West Ham,
you wouldn't
as well,
need a wild
against
card
Wolves.
Necessarily at that point.
Exactly.
Would you?
That's why the week after, I think, looks a better week to play it. So I think if you have got an injured player and you want to move them out, this is a good way to do it, because you move them out for a player that's got a game, and then you've got another game from them, you know, the week after. So Arsenal are the tricky one, because then they've got Liverpool.
Yeah.
Let's
talk about
Odegaard is someone. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Because really interesting. Obviously, it was the North London derby, which is always a fascinating match, or always hell, depending upon which side you sit on on North London. For me, it wasn't great this time around. Aubameyang for me is the interesting one, because he was the player that I was kind of looking at as one of my potential buys for game week 29. Because I think sometimes going into 29, given that there's going to be a lot of managers out there that don't have a full team, I was kind of looking at Arsenal thinking they might be some nice differential picks in there. Mm. And Aubameyang's prime example of that, right? As a differential pick, but then is late for the match and gets dropped. And it kind of makes you go, okay, particularly as Smith Rowe, I thought was really fantastic during that North London derby, had a really brilliant game. And from what Arteta was saying, it seemed to be Smith Rowe that took Aubameyang's place in the team when he was late. So can we invest in Aubameyang? Should we invest in Aubameyang? Smith Rowe, Odegaard, are there better options across the Arsenal team? Or do we go rogue and look at Tierney? Although I'm not sure what clean sheets there against West Ham.
Yeah, I think defensively, I think given they've got West Ham, who I think will score in that game, then they go into the Liverpool match. Defensively, I'm not too sure about them. They're a funny team, Arsenal, because I could see them something like losing to West Ham and then beating Liverpool. They although West Ham at the moment is quite a big game, so maybe they do tend to step it up. I mean, in these kind of bigger matches, they've had some good results this season. I like the look of the attack, though. I think particularly that these two games, I think they should get a goal against West Ham, and they should score against Liverpool as well. So Aubameyang is just given how few premiums there are. Fit for one thing, also with a game and delivering. I mean, there's only really him and Bale this week who've got a game over about 9 million who look half decent. And I do actually quite like the look of Aubameyang in that game against Liverpool. I think the disciplinary thing, I think you can look a bit too much into it. It's
not going to keep him out longer term, you wouldn't have thought.
It's not like it's an injury, turns up late. Exactly. Arteta makes a big thing of it. And I think
kind of has to, right? It's part of the policy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that game was big for Arsenal going forward for FPL. Because if they lose that game to you, that's it. They're at the top four race. They've got no chance. They're purely focused on the Europa League. Whether they go through in that, we'll find out tonight, I think it is.
Yeah.
But they've won that game now. So really, if they do get knocked out of Europa, they have still got a real chance of getting back into the top four. They're an outsider, but he will go for it. So I think that makes Aubameyang a better option. I think for me, it's between Aubameyang and Odegaard. I was really impressed with Odegaard again. I really like Saka as well, but obviously he's got the injury doubt. I think stats-wise, Saka is the one standing out. But Aubameyang for me is an easy move from Salah. So I think that's probably what I'm gonna end up doing.
Yeah, I feel like Aubameyang is a sensible option, like you say, for the next couple of weeks. I don't think I'd want to hold him long-term, like right through to the end of the season. But because I've got my wild card in play, it feels like I could have him for this week and I could have him against Liverpool, who I just don't see them not conceding the way that they are at the moment defensively. So it feels like Aubameyang could be a really nice... It's a straight choice for me between going Aubameyang and going Bale. And we can talk about the two games for next week in more detail, but I think that's the decision that a lot of FPL managers will be making. They'll be looking at their midfield, thinking, well, I could get both because I'm happy to lose a couple of players, but then that's probably points hits. And this is another thing we can talk about in a minute, is how many points hits is going to be the right thing? Because if we get a game week where the premiums blank like they did in 28, again in 29, this could be a very, very low scoring game week, given the lack of fixtures that we have anyway. So, in my view, you know, points hits have to be taken very carefully and with a lot of considered thought for the player, particularly this week, because the opportunity to make it back is just much more limited. Before we move on to look at game week 29 specifically and those four matches that we do have, just a quick shout out to a team that don't play next week. So Leicester obviously were very impressive against Sheffield United. Now, in part, of course, that's because Sheffield United are just horrendous at the moment. They're obviously in a bit of a dip of form, to say the least, although they will get a new manager hopefully. I'm trying my best to be nice to Sheffield United, because actually they were phenomenal last season and it's really sad to see what's happened to them this year. But from a Leicester perspective, I was really concerned about Leicester when the Maddison and Justin and Barnes injuries happened. I was like, we're going to have a repeat of what we had last season, where they're going to just fall from grace and miss out again. But Iheanacho, in the last couple of game weeks, has massively stepped up to the plate. Now, I know that people listening will go, yeah, but Sheffield United were awful. Their heads went and they, you know, they conceded five. But I was really impressed with him. That's 2 weeks in a row I've watched him. Obviously, you're not going to bring him in for this week because they don't play. But longer term, Leicester options, in particularly players like Iheanacho, could they be good differential picks to kind of get you through till the end of the season? Or are these players that you're kind of thinking, Iheanacho's never done this beyond one or two games and never, ever will he see the light of day in my team? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, five goals in three games for anyone, you have to kind of think, okay, is this someone who I should be considering? He had so much promise at City. You know, he was, when Aguero was injured, I think he stepped in, he played really well. When he signed for Leicester, I think they paid quite a bit for him, didn't they? About
Yeah,
was it about 30 million? Or am I just making that up? But yeah, he and then he signed. He just never really got going. It would have been interesting if Vardy had gone to Arsenal. I wonder if he would have been given a more kind of prominent role. But he's been kind of relegated to this kind of bit part player. So it's hard to judge. I haven't seen anything from him apart from the last few games to make me think he can step up and be part of a top four team while he's been in a Leicester shirt. But I mean, he's cheap. I mean, he's 5.7, and it's kind of coming at a time where some of these players around the 6 million mark just aren't really doing too much. I mean, Bamford, for example, is someone who's
gone off the boil.
His ownership's 50%, so you could switch him to Iheanacho and try and capitalize on that and hope that Iheanacho carries it on. I mean, Antonio as well. Antonio hasn't looked fit in the games that I've seen him play. Well, since I've brought him back in.
Gets about 60 minutes and looks like he's gone off a cliff.
Yeah,
doesn't he?
He does. I've never seen a player just stand there before. Like, just looks like he's like made of stone. Can't even walk, let alone run for a ball. So that is a bit of a concern. And then you look around other 6 million. I mean, Che Adams has started scoring now, obviously, kind of as I sold him. But I still don't.
You know,
if you're asking me straight up, if you're asking me straight up between Adams and Iheanacho, I don't think there's too much in it. So,
no.
Yeah, there's definitely potential there. I don't think I'll go there unless he kind of continues to show this stuff. But it's someone to consider for sure.
And I think given that they've got Man City in game week 30, it's not somebody that you're necessarily going to be thinking to bring in straight away. But I just think he's one to keep on the radar. He has really impressed me the last couple of weeks. And if he can continue to do that, I can't see any reason why he would lose his place in the team. And therefore, maybe might be a nice differential punt towards the end of the season.
It's the 32 to 35 period. Yeah. They've got West Brom, Palace, Southampton, Newcastle. I mean, it doesn't get a much better run than that. So that's going to be around the time when people are wildcarding and things. And yeah, I think he could even be a pretty safe punt for those four. Because if he stays in the team, he should get something from those.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's turn our attention to game week 29 then properly. Obviously, we've only got the 8 teams in action this weekend because of the FA Cup fixtures. So I think probably what we'll do this time around is we'll just go through the four games and have a little chat about who might be the best players to take a punt on for this week. Also sort of thinking longer term as well, because if you're going to take hits, which some managers are going to want to take some hits this week to get to as near as 11 players as you can, these are going to want to be, as you mentioned earlier, for players that you are happy to hold for game week 30 as well. You do not want to be taking hits for players that come game week 30, you look at your team and go, what have I done here? I've got these players that have got difficult fixtures and I don't really want them. Because the wild card does seem, if you still have it, to be best played ahead of game week 31. That seems like an ideal place for it to go. So we'll go through in order then. Let's start with the Friday night game, Fulham and Leeds. Now, a lot of FPL managers will be invested in Leeds already because of the double game week that we've just had a couple of weeks ago. So Rafinha, Bamford, Dallas, they're going to be popular picks across the Leeds side. I actually only have two Leeds players, just Bamford and Dallas. I never did the Rafinha thing. And in some ways, that's kind of worked. So although he did have that amazing double game week where he should have got like 50 points and just was phenomenal, but nobody finished anything. Since then, every time I watch Rafinha, I'm really impressed. He looks great. He puts in great balls. He's in all the right places. But the Leeds side just don't seem to be able to finish off what he's providing for them. What do we think about this game? Because I think this one is a really interesting one to call. I'm not sure how it's going to go. So is trebling up on Leeds the right thing? Or actually, if you have two Leeds players already, are you better off looking at Fulham instead?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I was listening to the Scoutcast the other night and Seb, obviously as a Leeds fan, had a really good take on kind of all of this stuff. I mean, the stats Rafinha posts are just unbelievable. I would actually argue you've been very lucky.
I have been. I definitely have. It's definitely
not. Lots we've got burnt by that. Yeah, and I think as a captain pick, he's someone that I'm really considering this week. Because
are you
when you've got a player with those kind of underlying stats, and I know Fulham have been better defensively, and it's interesting because a few months ago this would have been a no-brainer. This would have been three leads, bang, captain, they're going to win this 4-0, no one's going to argue. But now it does seem a lot tighter. But to me, Rafinha, I think is the standout across all the games. I think he's the one who I think has the biggest potential, because these games are tricky, right? Like, we're going to talk about them all in a bit more detail, but
very tough.
I don't see massive wins for or high scoring games in any of these. I think the game that probably does have the biggest potential to be high scoring is this Leeds game.
Yeah.
And although we haven't really seen it from either side, like we don't see Fulham conceding loads of goals, and we haven't seen Leeds scoring loads of goals, this could be the one where, you know, things kind of come a bit different. It's just a feeling I get. The stats don't really back that up. But if that does happen, then it's this Rafinha for me that's going to really benefit.
I think it's interesting. He's slightly more appealing to me with Bamford back. I think if Bamford makes it, which is looking more and more likely that he's going to, then that does make it a bit of a... He's the one, I think, for me with Rafinha that I'm kind of like, now, what do I do about him? Do I go, okay, it's time that I've got to invest in him. But I'm not convinced that I want three leads going forward. And this is where my kind of... I'm torn, because for this week, I think, yeah, I could go into it with Dallas, Rafinha and Bamford. And that feels like it will be quite template for Leeds picks. It feels like those will be the ones that if you're going to pick three Leeds, they're the three you're probably likely to take a punt on. Dallas, not necessarily for a clean sheet, really, because I think Fulham have got it in them to score in this game, but because of his attacking threat that he has going alongside that. But Rafinha just... Every time I watch him, I do watch behind the sofa, and I do think I've been lucky to get away with not having him so far, because he looks great. The balls are great.
Surely you want him for 30, though.
I'm quite happy to have him for 30. Yeah, yeah. I'm quite happy to have three leads for 30. And then obviously beyond that, I don't think I'd want three, but then I'm wildcarding out of that. So it's fine to lose them. And I actually think, when I think about it, I think Rafinha might be one that actually stays in the wildcard. It might be Bamford that ends up going. Yeah. It might be a bit of a change in formation that's required, because Bamford has been less impressive over the last few weeks. That's for sure. And I think, you know, there are ways that I might fancy restructuring my team to put a little bit more money into the forward positions rather than in the midfield.
He's been the one that a lot of managers have been benching, Bamford. So, you know, a lot of people have got the triple up, like I have, Dallas, Rafinha and Bamford, and they're the three. I mean, I don't think we need to waste too much time considering other options, because I think they are just the most sensible. Most sensible ones. And you know, it's Bamford. What people don't really want to take three leads into every game they play. The West Ham game is a good example. I think everyone senses that's going to be really tricky. So it was Bamford that was being benched. And this week as well, I had Bamford on my bench. Ended up coming on with his one pointer. But you know, it's Rafinha that's starting. So if I'm picking one of those two going forward, I agree with you. It's Rafinha for me.
Yeah. Okay. What about Fulham then? They've been really impressive. The change in them has been phenomenal. They made some really good signings, particularly Anderson. In January, he's made a massive difference defensively. They've been a lot more solid. They've been better going forward. To me, they look like the most likely to get out of the bottom three and survive if they can continue playing how they are at the moment. I don't think you'll go down. I'm totally convinced that Brighton are going to be fine. But I think if anything, it might be Newcastle that switches places with them. They just look like they're on a downward spiral. But Fulham look like they've got a bit of fight in them at the moment. And that makes me kind of question this game, because I think Fulham will look at this and they'll think, you know, we've beaten Liverpool. We should be able to beat a side that we know well in Leeds. Whilst the Fulham side has changed a lot over the last, couple of months, the Leeds side really hasn't. It's still the same side that they're used to playing against. So Fulham will know roughly what they're going to be coming up against Leeds. And I'm looking at players like Lookman and Madjer up top, and also in defence. I think defensively they look solid. Whether they keep a clean sheet or not is the difficulty, because their defenders don't have as much attacking threat as, say, the likes of Creswell and Dallas do. So there may be a difficult investment, but the keeper looks like a nice option. He will make saves in that game. Leeds will put in balls and he will get save points. I'm absolutely sure of that. So if you were going to go for a Fulham player, who would be your number one kind of target for this week?
Yeah, the problem with Fulham is the goals, is who's going to score the goals. And obviously Parker's taken Mitrovic out of the team, and he's got a system that works really well now with more pressing, more energy. And Lookman, for example, is someone I brought in a while ago, and he's looked really good, but hasn't delivered. I mean, he got 11 points in 25. He's blanked in every game around that, right until game week 19 when he got 7. So, you know, you're talking about 10 out of 11 games in which he's blanked in. Yeah. And this is a player who looks promising but isn't delivering on it. So, you know, that's the kind of frustration you get with a lot of their kind of attacking assets. I think the keeper is the one for me that that I agree with, that I think is the best option, because he's busy, makes loads of saves. They look decent defensively. And you know, if you have got a kind of a double, you've got Pope, for example, when you don't have another keeper and you're looking for a keeper to get in, I think Areola is a really strong pick. There's no one else really that I'd like the look of. I mean, Aina looks good. He's probably the defender with the most chance of attacking returns. Marja, I mean, he exploded on the scene, didn't he? 13 points against Everton, but
not done a lot
Fulham
since.
Striker. I'm just not sure they're going to deliver enough over the next 2 weeks. I think Leeds is a tricky one, and I am backing Leeds to win that game. Mm. I'm hoping they win that game. And then they go into, is it Villa the next game?
Villa next.
I don't think Marge is going to, he's not going to get huge returns, I don't think, in those two.
No,
so,
I think you're right. And I think,
hard to predict.
It's difficult, isn't it, with Fulham, I think, because for most people going into this game week, well, over 40% of managers anyway, they have Martinez as a keeper that they just have. And therefore, it doesn't make any sense to spend points bringing in another keeper, because you're probably not going to have, unless you've got already a team of 11 and you've got a free transfer, then you might think about getting in someone like Areola just to give you a better keeper option. Well, one with potentially a clean sheet. But then I think even then I'd probably look at Sanchez at Brighton rather than Areola, just because the clean sheet looks more likely in that Brighton game than it does against Leeds. So, but if you're free hitting and you're looking for a keeper, I don't think Martinez is the best pick this time around. No. I think Sanchez, Areola, one of those two probably looks like a decent option, because whilst...
I think Areola's potentially got the highest ceiling, because he's going to be busy. Yeah. So if they do manage to keep a clean sheet. Yeah.
There'll be clean. There'll definitely be save points for him in that game. I cannot see that there's not save points, because Leeds will attack. That's what Leeds do. So there will be opportunities for save points for him. If he manages to keep a clean sheet, then there's going to be bonus points for him too, because by the time you add together the saves that he's going to have. So he could have the highest ceiling. Sanchez is probably, given Newcastle, we'll go into this game in a minute, but given Newcastle don't have a lot of attacking threat right now, he's probably not likely to get as many save points. And therefore, it's potentially the Brighton defenders I would expect to get the bonus points if a clean sheet is kept and there's not many goals scored going forward. So I think there are good keeper options, and Areola potentially is the one from Fulham that I would look at. Now, without a free hit and having Martinez already, I've got my transfers getting some more outfield players. So he's going to sit. But I think if I was free hitting, he'd be one that I would have a little look at, definitely.
I'd agree.
Let's talk about Brighton then. I've got the Brighton expert in. So
people keep asking me about this. For a lot of pressure.
So this is the game, I think, that all managers are looking at going, clean sheets, clean sheets, clean sheets. Because actually, you talk about the rest of the games. We've mentioned Fulham and Leeds already, but afterwards we've got West Ham and Arsenal, and then Aston Villa and Spurs. All of those games look like they've got goals in them. So when you're trying to pick a keeper, if you're free hitting, or a defence if you're free hitting, or just actually a defence if you're not free hitting, because that's where most people are lacking players for this week. It's lack of defenders. Most people have players like Creswell and Dallas, but then they're looking to top that up with at least one other. And this game is the one that I think most people are looking at. Brighton defensively have actually been really, really good of late. Although they haven't kept a clean sheet in the last four, the opportunities that they're giving the oppositions that they're coming against are few and far between. And I think, you know, I wrote down they've given up the fewest shots in the league in the last four with 26. The next closest is Chelsea with 36, which is a big difference, right? So I'm looking at this Brighton side. Now, I was saying to you before, didn't I, that about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I really wanted to buy Lewis Dunk, but I couldn't afford to buy Dunk and Kane at the same time. I was 0.1 short, which annoyed me a lot. And in the end, I thought, right, well, it comes down to a choice then between Veltman and Ben White. Or Dan Burn. And I ruled Dan Burn out, but I can't really tell you why, but I'm quite glad I did now with the injury that he's got going into this game. So it came down to a choice between the security of Ben White and the more attacking threat of Joel Veltman. And I messaged Jules Breach from the FPL show, and I said, Jules, as a resident Brighton expert, talk to me about Tyrique Lamptey, because if he comes back, what are the ramifications for the Brighton defence? Who is it that loses their spot? Because I cannot bring in a player thinking about 29, only to find Lamptey appears back on the scene and I have a defender that's not playing anymore. And in the end, I came down to the decision that I just needed safety. I couldn't have Dunk because I couldn't afford him, so I'd go White. Now, with the Lamptey surgery that he's now got to have or has maybe had. Obviously, Veltman is definitely keeping his spot, so I think he's a nice option. But Dunk seems to be the standout, right? If you're going for a Brighton defender, you could just go Dunk. Yeah?
Mm. If you're going for a Brighton player, you go for Dunk. I think he's... I said, whenever anyone asks me this, they've asked me this, been asking me this for weeks. I said, if you've got the money, Dunk is the best. I mean, Veltman has played really well, but I think Dunk is honestly our main attacking threat. I mean, we've got all these players in the team, Trossard, we've got Gross, we've got players that can cross a ball and find him, and he's just shown kind of season after season that he's got this ability to score. And important goals as well. He's the captain. He's Brighton through and through. And he's if anyone's going to be hurting about where Brighton are in the league, it's going to be him. So I wasn't surprised at all to see him score that goal against Southampton, because it just means everything to him to stay up. And it was such a big win for us. Newcastle is just, I mean, we should win. We should win. Newcastle, like you say, they're on the slide. Yeah. Brighton are playing well. I think we've got like one of the lowest XG conceded in the whole league over the whole season, but we still find a way to concede stupid goals. And it's happened all year. And we find, you know, I've never seen a team like Brighton this year in the league that can play so well, defend so well, attack so well, create so many chances, and yet be in a relegation battle. I totally agree. I mean, you know, on another season, if we had someone who could finish, I honestly think we would be, well, easily in the top 10. We'd be eighth, ninth in the league, the way we play.
Brighton are one of those teams that I've really enjoyed watching this season. I watch the Brighton games every week, and every week I'm like, how have you not won this game? How have you conceded in this game? If you had a decent striking option, I think you would be up there probably level with Spurs. Like, it's just one of those things, because your defence is so much more solid than ours is. This game, I think, has got Brighton. It should be a Brighton win. On paper, everything leads me to think that Brighton should win this game. But could it end up being 0-0? The last time I saw you at the FPL show, we had a long conversation, didn't we? Because it was just ahead of Brighton and Aston Villa. And I said, I think this game's got 0-0 all over it, because Aston Villa don't have Grealish, blah, blah, blah. And it was. It finished 0-0. Or how it finished 0-0, I don't know, because that Martinez goal led the charmedest life I've ever seen. But I think this game, there is potential it goes the same way, that the Newcastle goal leads a very charmed
life. Sam, you've said it. You've got a good eye. You've got a good eye for these things. I'm not gonna disagree. I think the key thing is, you've got to remember, we can't lose this.
You can't lose it.
We can't lose. If we draw, I would say that's the worst result for Newcastle, because I think given the situations of the two clubs, I know Newcastle got Wilson back. I think he's doing individual training. He's going to be massive for them coming back. But if we're going into the end of the season run on kind of equalish points, you've got to fancy Brighton for it.
Yeah, 100%.
If Newcastle win this, though, then I think that creates a whole new thing. Brighton is just purely about, if it's 0-0, I want us to win, obviously, but if it is 0-0, I don't think that's a completely
disastrous result. It's not a bad result for you, is it? And I think that's the thing, is that both sides will look at this with the attitude that you just have. We cannot lose this game. We cannot lose this game. So it could be a cagey affair, this one. Which is why I think investment in the Brighton defence looks wise. And if you really must invest in a Newcastle player, then you're probably also looking at a defender, probably someone like Lascelles, if you want to go somewhere different. But I think the defence makes a good option. But somebody that has impressed me going forward is Lallana. Now, Lallana, I know, is very injury prone. And if I mentioned this to Lee, he'd go, you can't invest in Lallana in the same way that he said about Matip, because as soon as you do, the risk of a reoccurrence or a flare-up of an injury happens. But the last few games watching Lallana, I think he's been impressive. He's added a bit of a different dynamic to the team and to the way that you play. I don't know. He's one that keeps popping out at me every time I look at my team, given I've got some defenders already, so I'm kind of looking at some midfield players. And he's one I keep looking at thinking, I would quite like to take a bit of a punt on Lallana for this week. And I also think that longer term, Brighton are the sort of side that I do want to invest in, because you're going to have something to fight for right until the end of the season. And those are the sort of clubs that look like decent options. Even if the fixtures are a bit tough, you know, the fight is going to be there. Whereas you might not be able to say that about some of the other sides that we have to deal with over the next few weeks. Lallana, interested?
Lallana. Yeah, I mean, this is the fittest he's been at Brighton. And I mean, that isn't saying much because he hasn't been, been fit at all. But you can just see, you can see the way he plays and the way he's running and the way he's, you know, he's not getting subbed off early anymore. And he's not, with Lallana, you can see it. He'll run for a ball and he'll just wince a bit and you'll be like, oh no, this is it.
Here it goes.
He's
going
to go off and he might carry on. Yeah, but he seems to be in quite a good place now. I think he makes Brighton a better team because he is a really, really classy player. And he's also like leadership wise as well. It's we need that kind of a bit further up the pitch because Dunk is great at marshalling defence and getting everyone. But the problem of our season has been composure up front. And I think Lallana there pulling the strings, orchestrating things, shouting at players, I think should hopefully help us a little bit with that. I haven't really seen it too much, but I get the sense that having that kind of up the pitch is going to help take a bit of the burden off Dunk to really kind of get these players motivated, drum that up and get them kind of firing. The issue is I just think Trossard's a better pick. I think, I think looking at how Brighton set up in the second half of that Southampton game, Lallana dropped deeper and the system changed to try and get the most out of Trossard. And he was picking up the space. He was the one having the shots.
Yeah,
he's been a real disappointment actually since he signed, because I really thought he was going to be a really, really strong player that would feature in a lot of our teams. I'm hoping that the second half of the season is going to see that, because I think he's got quality in him. It's just about unlocking it in the right way. And I think we could see that over the next few weeks. So he's someone I'm thinking of this week, Trossard, over Lallana for me.
Oh, you see, yeah, it's tough this one, isn't it? Because keep looking at Brighton and think, I've got, as I mentioned already, I've got Ben White. I'm quite happy to own him for the clean sheet that I think he's going to get. I'm going to spend my life wishing he was Lewis Dunk, but hey, I'm in the Ben White camp now and I'm not going to get out of the Ben White camp to get in. It doesn't make any sense to take out a player. I could double up, of course, that is an option. I could go double Brighton defence, but then there's Sanchez as well to consider. And a lot of people will be looking at the goalkeeper as a double up if you want to do that. But with the going forward players, Trossard, Lallana, I look at Lallana and I'm really tempted. But then I look at the next fixture on the schedule, the West Ham-Arsenal game, and think Jesse Lingard, to me, looks so much more certain to get FPL points. And whilst I would really like to take a punt on somebody like Lallana, if I do that, that means I'm going to be taking a points hit. And is a points hit for somebody like Trossard and Lallana guaranteed to bring returns? I'm not convinced it is. But Jesse Lingard, on the other hand, I'm fairly sure is going to return in this game. I thought that without him in the game in 28, that West Ham really missed him. They looked a bit blunt, actually, without him. I think, you know, we spoke before about Antonio and how Antonio was, you know, looking a bit tired all the time. He gets about 60 minutes, looks tired. But Jesse Lingard, it's almost like this is the beginning of his season. He's in great form. He's full flow. He's doing everything right. He's got a real point to prove at the moment. He's returned in 5 of his 6 games since he joined West Ham. He's returned in each of his last 4 games that he's played for them. Super, super impressive. And he's one that I'm looking at. And you said before about, you know, differential captain picks with Rafinha. Jesse Lingard, for me, is the one that I think if I didn't have Harry Kane in my side, I would captain Jesse Lingard in this game.
Wow. I've never heard such a passionate, like...
I never thought I'd be passionate about
Jesse Lingard.
I never thought this would happen. I don't know where it's come from, but every time I've watched him since he's joined West Ham, and I think that game against Spurs was like oh, wow, where's this player been? Like, where has this player been? And you speak to some Manchester United fans and they go, yeah, but it's always been in him to be like this. He's just never really got going. Whereas he's come to West Ham and they've kind of gone, all right, then in you go. I do think that he's had a bit of a negative effect on Souček and in the positions that Souček takes up, because Souček had been phenomenal for large parts of this season. But if I was free hitting this week, I wouldn't have Souček. I'd just get...
I think he's clear of Souček now for sure. Yeah. I think it was very disappointing, the United game, because I think Moyes panics a bit when he plays in these bigger games and he sets teams up not to lose. And I think what West Ham why West Ham have been doing so well is because of the amount of creativity they've had. So when they've had Lingard, Benrahma, Antonio, you know, that's Fornals, all these guys, they've created chances and it's put them on the front foot. Whereas no disrespect to Mark Noble, but as soon as you stick Mark Noble in the team and you've got Mark Noble
so much more defensive.
And Souček, it just, the energy just isn't there. The same, that same attacking intent to push teams back isn't there. And once I saw that lineup, I was like, this is probably going to be a fairly comfortable routine United win. And it was. So it's going to be really interesting to know what Moyes does, because he's got options of how he wants to set the team up. And what does he choose to do against Arsenal? Is it another kind of negative game like that, where I think Arsenal probably run out winners of that fairly comfortably? Or does he go for it a bit more? And does he learn from that United game and set them up like they have been doing so well? And if he does do that, then I think they cause Arsenal real problems. So it's a tricky one.
It is. It's tough, this game, because I think this game has got, if they go for it and play in the way that I think they will, I think West Ham win this game. I certainly think they score in this game. So it puts me off investing in the likes of Tierney in the Arsenal defence, because I just can't see a clean sheet. And the way that Arsenal are sometimes, we saw it against Villa, like they just don't quite get going. They did against Spurs. They were really good against Spurs. And, you know, in some ways that makes me want to kind of invest in them. But then I'm always a bit cautious that we've seen other games from Arsenal this season where they just haven't. And I think West Ham will look at this fixture and go, we need to go for this one. Like, we need to go out there. They are top four rivals, because they, you know, if we're keeping all of these players in the top four race, or at least the European spots race, West Ham will look at this as more than just a derby. It's more than just a London derby. It's all about league position, and they can finish above Arsenal, which would be the first time in, well, I can't remember the last time West Ham had such a good season as they are currently having. And I'm kind of confident. So I'm going to be going into this game with three West Ham players. So I have Creswell, who's just been phenomenal, and I can't imagine going into this game week without. He's, the set piece potential he has is ridiculous. His ability to get attacking returns in games where I'm not expecting them to come. He's one of those players that in normal weeks, I would never bench him, because the chances of him popping up with a set piece free kick are just as good as him keeping a clean sheet. And whilst longer term, the West Ham fixtures aren't great, I still think I will keep him. He's a great option.
Well, straight into that Wolves game as well next week. So if you are looking at getting him, or Soufal or Dawson, maybe, you've got, you know, if you don't get anything against Arsenal, I think you're going into a pretty good game against Wolves as well. So I really, Creswell is, I keep finding ways not to get him. His price keeps going up and up and up, but at some point I've just got to accept that he is a 6 million defender now, and I should probably at least consider him.
He's great. he really is. And he's really nice to own as well, because whenever he does anything, it really helps rank, because he's still not as highly owned as he should be. So anytime he does anything, it's kind of like the boost that it gives me to my overall rank is huge. So I'm going to have him, I'm going to have Suchek, and I'm going to have Lingard for this game. Now, Antonio is one that I think, you know, he is popular. He's quite highly owned in the game. But as we've mentioned, he gets to about 60 minutes and seems to just not have anything left in the tank. And that worries me a little bit about Antonio. I do kind of have the fear of him. Now, there's always scope that he's going to do something, but I feel like of all of the attacking players at West Ham at the moment, Lingard is probably the most likely to do something. Would you agree with that? Or you still think Antonio is a better option?
Depends what Antonio we get. If we get the Antonio that we've seen in glimpses this season and a lot of last season, the one that can really bully defenders, harass players, charge through, you know, so strong, so fast, then I'd back him. But that feels like a bit of a kind of wishful thinking, because I think you're right. I just haven't seen that from him over the last few weeks since he's come back from like another kind of injury that he's had. So I'd agree. I think Lingard is the most attacking player in that side. And if I was going to pick one now, it would be him.
That makes me feel a bit more confident. Maybe I'll just get him and Lallana then, just in case Lallana does something mental.
Well, you got to get Lallana now. The thing with Lallana, it's a punt, but like, it's a punt that you're going to work on in a few weeks anyway. So now's the time to take a risk and get some. I mean, if Lallana bangs in a goal, a couple of goals, that's going to do wonders for you.
Can you also imagine if I don't do it and he does that? Lallana gets a brace and I've not brought him in, I'll never let him down.
This is the problem with doing these, Sam. Once you say something like this, you've got to do it. Because if you don't, many times.
The nightmares. I've got two free transfers, so it is doable. I mean, one of them was the plan this week was to do Bale and Lingard. That was what I was doing. And then, of course, we'll talk about Spurs in a bit more detail in a minute. But I sort of went off the Bale idea a little bit. after the derby at the weekend. And then I was kind of like, well, do I go with Aubameyang instead then? But I find this West Ham Arsenal game really, really difficult. So I keep looking at that side thinking, I just don't know how I feel about Aubameyang. He's sometimes brilliant, sometimes not. He's Arsenal, sometimes great, sometimes not. Smith Rowe looks good, but will he always start? Like, is there potential he gets benched? I don't see a clean sheet. So if I'm, what am I betting on with Tierney? Am I just betting on some attacking returns? Well, then if I'm just thinking about attacking returns, maybe Udegaard is better option. Lacazette, will he start, will he not start? Like, Arsenal feel like a minefield. Of all of these, they are the hardest team to pick players from, because I don't know if we can be sure who Arteta starts, given that they've got the Europa League tonight, Thursday evening. I don't know who the best investment is at Arsenal, is my honest approach to this. I keep going back to Aubameyang, but I think that's in part because I've got so much money in the bank that I feel I should spend it rather than maybe just go for somebody like Smith Rowe, who looks really nice but is really cheap, and I'd have 20 million in the bank or something ridiculous.
The good thing about Aubameyang is he could play up front, and then you've got an out of position Arsenal classified midfielder playing up front, and that to me makes him the best option. It is a tough one. I think defensively, as I said, I don't think there is anyone that I'd really be considering. To me, it's between Aubameyang and Odegaard for me. I do like Smith Rowe, but Odegaard just has that role in the team where he just kind of finds his pockets of space and you know, threads balls in, and he just seems to be now becoming that kind of like advanced playmaker who's just making stuff happen and making stuff tick. And I think for FPL wise, that kind of player is normally kind of gold. And he's cheap, isn't he? It's like 5.9 or something. So
yeah,
absolute bargain price as well.
That's the other thing, isn't it? Is that people will be doing Salah to whoever. And there is therefore that tendency to, you know, sort the game by affordability and therefore have everybody. And so you kind of look at the top and go, Aubameyang, Bale. They're going to be the top two that come up in that list of replacements that are playing this week. And sometimes that does mean that you neglect players like Odegaard or Lingard that we talked about already.
But it feels wrong having 6 million in your bank,
doesn't it? Yeah.
That's long and short of it. If players didn't have any value, you might look somewhere else, but they do, and you don't want to look like you're an idiot because you've got all this money and not doing anything with it.
Particularly if then Aubameyang or Bale goes and bangs in this game week, because then people will go, well, you had the money, you know, why didn't you just invest in that premium option?
I
think it kind of makes sense to talk about Aubameyang alongside Bale, because for most FPL managers, that's going to be the decision that they're going to be making. Are we going to do we go with the Arsenal guy or do we go with the Spurs guy? Now, this is a hard one for me because Gareth Bale is hero worshipped in my brain. So not going for Bale and going for Aubameyang feels almost sacrilegious. Like it's just something that I should never do as a Spurs fan. But I look at these two fixtures and I don't think either of them's easy. I think Aston Villa this is a tough game for Spurs. They're going to probably have cash back for this week and that will make a big difference. So they're going to be back to being full strength across the back of their defence. Martinez is what Martinez is this season. He's an unbelievable shot stopper. So from that point of view, it's not going to be an easy week for Spurs, particularly if we don't see Sun, which we're not expecting to. We'll see a different Spurs, probably a Spurs now Lamella is suspended with Dele Alli in the starting 11. That's what I think is going to happen this weekend. I think we'll see Dele Alli replace Sun. We could potentially see Bale swap sides and Bergwijn play instead. I guess we're going to get some ideas from what happens in the Europa League on Thursday evening. If I was to kind of put you on a fence and say pick between Aubameyang and Bale, what would you do?
Yeah, I kind of said it earlier. I love Bale. He is someone that I really wanted to start seeing hit some form. But like I said, I just don't get the sense that Mourinho likes him that much, and for me, you know, the Son injury should be okay. Now Bale is now, because it was between those two, I think, as to which midfield you go for. Maybe Moura has been playing quite well, but I still think it's still between those two. Yeah, but Son's injury weakens Spurs considerably for a start.
Does,
take out Son and Kane from that team, and you're shadow of the team that you are.
100%.
And I just think Villa are a team that can frustrate. And as soon as Spurs start getting frustrated, Bell goes off.
Yeah.
Because he's either going to be the player that grabs the game by the scruff and drives you forwards, bangs in two goals and you win it comfortably, or he's going to be on the sidelines, not really getting the ball, like we saw in your last game against Arsenal. He barely had a kick. He looked completely out of it. So he's a risk, whereas I think Aubameyang has got a bit more going for him, because I think he's got that ability to play up front. And you look at the players around him with Smith Rowe and Odegaard, and the creative players they've got that can bring him into the game and really unlock teams. I just think Arsenal have got more of that than Spurs have got. Whereas with Bale, you're relying on him to do it himself. And he's just so hit and miss in terms of him being able to do that or not. So he's a bigger gamble for me. I think Aubameyang is a safer pick, personally.
Interesting.
Not what you wanted to hear, I'm sure.
Well, no, but it is sort of what I'm thinking, to be honest. It is the sort of conversation that I've been having with myself. Now,
and penalties as well for Aubameyang too.
Yeah, of course. And that does make a big difference because, of course, Kane, unless something major happens in the Europa League, he's going to be playing and therefore he's going to be on penalties. And Bale won't even take all the free kicks because we all know that Harry Kane loves to take one himself from time to time. So, you know, there is different kind of pros and cons, I think, to owning Bale and owning Aubameyang. I'm still not quite sure which way I'll go on it, is the reality. But I think this Aston Villa Spurs game is probably going to be the one where the majority of managers are most highly invested, because most people have already got Martinez and either another Aston Villa defender or Watkins or all of them. So you're either going to be tripled up on Aston Villa or you'll be at least doubled on Spurs, because most people have already got Kane and or Son, Bale, a combination of those three.
Yep.
Grealish should be back for this game. I'm sort of expecting to see Grealish play in this one. The stuff we've heard from Dean Smith seemed to be suggesting that he was fit for the last time around, but then got ill, and that's why he missed out in game week 28. So with Traore potentially now missing through injury, but the potential that Grealish is back, that does make Aston Villa look like a much, much better option, doesn't it, in terms of the attacking potential that they have. What does that mean for the Spurs defence? Because for a lot of people, they'll be looking at the Spurs defenders thinking, you know, particularly Reguilon, is there a player there that I could take a bit of a chance on? Very lowly owned, definitely got some attacking threat in him. Outside chance of a clean sheet, because Villa aren't scoring they haven't scored a lot of goals, particularly if Grealish isn't there, there's the outside chance of a clean sheet. I think it's very outside chance, to be honest. I don't think it will happen. I think Villa will score in this game. But there's an outside chance that there's a clean sheet. Reguilon, interested?
I mean, the trouble is, if he starts against Villa, is he going to start against Newcastle? Does he miss one of these games? Which one does he start? That's the problem with having Ben Davies there. He kind of comes in and out of the team a fair bit. I mean, Spurs defensively, I don't know why Mourinho insists on parking the bus with the defence that you've got, because it's just not good enough at all.
And, no, they're not.
You know, he's gonna have to make some changes, I think, in the summer to get it more in line with how he wants it to be. Because I don't fancy you to keep a clean sheet in any match, if I'm being honest.
I agree.
I just don't see any solidity at all. Grealish back is gonna make things a lot better for Villa if it happens. But even without him, I still think Watkins can cause trouble, because he's such a busy player. He's just going to harass your centre-backs constantly. The right ball comes to him. I mean, he'll probably hit the post or get it ruled out for VAR, because that seems to be what happens to him every week. But he's the kind of player that if for the Spurs defenders, I think that kind of busybody up front is going to
annoy
them. Yeah, exactly. So I fancy Villa to score, actually.
I do. I do. I think this game has got goals for both sides in it, because I also think that Spurs are now looking at these sorts of matches going, we have to win these. I think Mourinho learned quite a lot. And Lee and I had this discussion on our live stream on Sunday night. I'm not convinced that that was Mourinho's tactic on Sunday, of that deep sit back that he did in the first half. I'm not convinced that that was what Mourinho told them to do. The players that he sent out onto that pitch were not the players that you send out onto that pitch if you've told them to sit back and hold a defensive secure line. If he was doing that, he sends out the likes of Eric Dier, he sends out the likes of Sanchez, he's not going to send out Son, Bale, Kane, Moura. Reguilon. You know, you're more likely to play Ben Davis if you want to be a bit more defensively solid. So I think that was a bit more of a, I don't want to say a nerves thing, but I think there was a bit of a kind of, let's just ease ourselves into the game from the players themselves. Marino's annoyance on the bench was clear. Like, he was furious for most of that first half. And I think he said a couple of times, and Kane and the bigger players have come out and said, you know, this isn't something that Mourinho is telling us to do. The boss doesn't tell us to park the bus. He tells us to play, but we somehow end up parking the bus. Now, I think he goes to Villa Park this weekend and says, you cannot park. You have to go and play. You have to attack. Now, whether that works without Son, we'll find out. I think he's likely to play Dele Alli instead. I don't think he'll play Bergwijn. I think the way he'll set up is to keep Bale where he is and to play Dele Alli in Son's position without Lamella being there. But I actually think that the loss of Lamella is quite big as well, because he would have just gone and harried Aston Villa and been annoying to them, and would have potentially been a bit of a difference in a way that I don't see Dele Alli doing. He has got other options. It doesn't have to be Dele, of course, but I just think he probably will be. So if you're really rogue on a free hit up in the 8 million category in the world, then take a punt on Dele Alli for this week. Maybe. But I think this game is quite tough to call. I don't see clean sheets for either of them. Yeah, most people will have Martinez in goal. And I think the likelihood is that the most highly captained player comes out of this game too, because I think Harry Kane is likely to be the one that most managers give the armband to.
I like Moura if I was going to take a punt, maybe over Ali. I just thought Moura, he's not a player I particularly liked in the past, apart from his hat trick against Ajax, which is probably the greatest moment of football I've ever seen in my life. But in the last few games, he seems to be kind of carrying the torch a bit for Mourinho, and the one that's actually trying to make things happen more than, a bit like what Bale did a couple of weeks ago when he was really going for it. Moore is kind of stepping into that, but just doesn't really have the same quality, obviously, that Bale's got. The trouble with Mourinho and the trouble with Spurs in general is you're always going to look like you're parking the bus when your main striker drops into defensive midfield to orchestrate attacks, to play as a centre back at times. And that's just what Kane does now. You accept it. It's part of his role. It's part of what he obviously likes to do. It's different managers he's done it under, and it's happening more and more. But I think that is what has the effect on the team. You see your captain and striker dropping back deep, and you instinctively come back, I think, to drop in as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think since Bale has come back to starting matches, and when Bale does start matches over the last kind of four weeks, Harry Kane is top for penalty area touches for Spurs. That's the first time he's been top for penalty area touches for Spurs for a very, very long time. And I think that's because the way that when Bale and Son are both there, he has that a bit more kind of ability to stay up top. But without one of them there, he will naturally come deeper, and it does have an impact. And I think not having Son there will affect Kane. But I still think that most managers will look at that game and go, of all of these players that I've got this week in terms of form, he's got 5 attacking returns in his last 4, Kane. And I know he's been disappointing in a couple of game weeks, in particular in the London derby, but he was unlucky not to score right at the death of that game. You know, the free kick that came off the post. There was a couple of opportunities where I thought, how have you not scored? Villa will give him a couple of opportunities. Martinez will probably have another worldie, because he does. He loves a bit of a worldie this season. But I think I'm unlikely to look anywhere else other than Kane for the armband, if I'm really honest. I think he's the obvious choice. Lingard's my second pick. He'll be my vice-captain this week. I think he's got some good stats behind him to back him up. But I think it's too risky to take it off Kane this week.
I think Kane's a solid choice.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I think let's just have a little chat about the minimum number of players that we need, because that's going to be a big thing. Most managers out there are going to be going, you know, I was setting up okay, but then I've got flags on players like Son and Bamford and Traore, and we've kind of spoken about them already. But if you've not got your free hit and you're just going into this game week, what's kind of the minimum number in your mind that you think that's the number of players that you need for this week?
I think considering none of the games look particularly amazing, I think we can be a little bit less stringent in how many players that we feel is necessary. I think if you've got 8 or 9 of the main guys, solid guys, I think that's fine. I think 8 if you've got the likes of Lingard, you know, the three Leeds players, maybe Aubameyang there, Kane and stuff, and you've got, you know, eight of those guys, I think you're fine. I think hits are an interesting one. I think if you're looking to play the wild card in a few weeks, you've got to be looking at these next two games. And I think there is potential for quite a lot of these players to return the hit back. I think Brighton aren't one of those teams because they've got United next week. But I think if you're taking hits for Leeds players, Villa players, there's another team with a good game in 30, which is Spurs players as well, then you should see that points hits be returned sort of over those two games. So yeah, I think, you know, it's double side to it, but nine for me is about where I'd be happy, comfortable being.
Yeah, I think when you look on live FPL at the moment, and obviously we are on Thursday morning, so we've still got a lot of people that won't have made any transfers yet because they'll be waiting for Europa League action. But at the moment, live FPL has team averages at seven players. Now, some people will play free hits later, of course, and that will have an impact on averages. People will make changes. Like, I've got two free transfers this week. I currently have nine players, but one of them is Son and one of them is Bamford. So I'm expecting to actually have eight. Because I don't think Son's going to play. So I was planning to have 11, but now without a hit, I'll have 10, which feels absolutely fine. I'm quite happy to go into the game week with 10. I don't feel I need a points hit to get to 11, unless I feel really compelled by somebody at the last minute, and then I might do it. But I think, you know, a lot of managers keep messaging me going, should I take an 8-point hit? Should I take a 12-point hit? Should I take, you know, I've got six players. Should I take a 12-point hit? And I'm like, there is scope in these games that these players only get you 2 points. If you've taken a 4-point hit for them, then you're having a negative impact on your rank. And that's just something I think you should consider. You know, if you're talking about a points hit for somebody like Lewis Dunk that we talked about earlier, that has so much potential to explode this week with a clean sheet and potentially some bonus points if he gets an attacking return as well. You know, could we have Lewis Dunk get 15 points this week? Yeah, we could. Is he likely to just get two? I don't think so. I've said it now, haven't I? But I don't see Lewis Dunk just getting 2 points. I think he'd get more than that. And therefore, for a player like him, it's potentially worth it. Somebody like Dele Alli, is there a chance he just gets one? Yes, absolutely. So would I be taking a hit for him? No, I wouldn't. And I think that's the thing that you've got to consider, isn't it? If taking hits can be useful, but it can also be an absolute nightmare. And therefore, just be wary of taking too many, I think, would be my advice. Would you agree with that? Does that sound a reasonable
thing? Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I think, you know, if you look at it over 2 weeks, then are you strengthening your team going forward? Because that to me is the problem with Dunk, is Dunk doesn't strengthen you in that Game Week 30 match. In fact, you're going to probably be wanting to bench him. And if you're taking out the likes of Gundogan, Fernandes for a hit, and then going to be looking to bring in those back in a few weeks, you're having to use transfers, they're going to cost you more money. So really, if you've got Gundogan and Fernandes, you're already quite limited in the kind of attacking players that you can bring in for a hit. So if you're looking at taking hits for defenders, straight away, you're thinking, well, that player's pretty much got to get a clean sheet just to pay that back.
Yeah.
Are they going to get an attacking return? Would I be that certain on Dunk getting an attacking return against Newcastle? Probably not. If I'm looking at, I don't think I'd be taking a hit to bring in Dunk, given the game he's got next week, personally. I think the likes of Alli and Trossard and players maybe are a bit more exciting because it's costing you two points for the transfer.
Yeah.
You're either going to lose those 2 points or you're going to maybe hit something that no one else has got. So I think hits for the attacking players are always preferable, I think.
Okay.
I can't endorse a hit for Dunk. That's what I'm saying.
I bet you a lot of people do. I was chatting
to
Liverpool.
Yeah, they will.
With you, and I think he's going to captain Lewis Dunk this week. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that will do those things, and that's the other thing.
Braver than me.
I think that's the other thing for me is I'm looking at, you know, overall rank, which is obviously so important to the likes of you and I at the minute, trying to just break that breakthrough. And, you know, if I don't take a hit this week, that's going to give me a massive rank boost just because I haven't taken a hit, because so many managers will have, you know, five or six players and think, I really need to take that hit. I need to get to nine. I need to get to 10 or 11. Actually, sometimes just not taking the hit gives you a nice buffer to start the game week. And actually that might end up being better.
If there was a standout fixture, if there was a real fixture, you know, if Sheffield United were playing Chelsea, you know, or something, or Man City or something, and then I'd be way more on board with taking hits. But there's just nothing that really screams to me, you need to get these players in. There's a real great punt here who I want. I mean, when we're talking about Lallana as potentially like the greatest punt of the week, you know, there's, I don't think there's that much to get excited about. So yeah, I would try and limit the hits if possible.
I'll tell you what, if Lallana braces this week, you know that I am going to be messaging you, don't you? I'm going to be messaging you.
You've got to get him, Sam. I told you. You've got to get him in.
You're just going to get loads of spam of gifts of Lallana celebrating over the next the next few days if Lallana goes mental at the weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, right. As thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure to
talk
to
you. No problem at all.
I will be back after the international break with another Scout the Game week. This time around, I'll be joined by the FPL Experiment guys again. So I'll have Adam, Greg and Nick back with me to look at, well, whatever game week 29 ends up looking like. And we're all looking, start looking ahead to game week 30. Talk soon, guys.